At New Orleans, he used 17 wooden warships. He didn't have any ironclads. 210 guns on those vessels, and 20 mortar boats, which were boats that would carry a single piece of artillery that fired a shot in a very high arc that was useful against installations. The Confederates had two forts downriver from New Orleans that defended it, Forts Jackson and St. Philip, a few light steamboats, and a few thousand men. In mid-April, the mortar boats began to bombard the forts between below New Orleans. They fired about 17,000 shells to no significant effect. Farragut grew weary of waiting and said, "We'll just run past the forts," which he did with his fleet. Past the forts they went. 2 a.m. on April 24th, 1862, single file, the Union vessels went past the forts. 100 Confederate cannons opened on them. The Federal vessels answered with broadsides. Eventually, the little Confederate ships at New Orleans came out to engage the Union Navy. The Union Navy very easily brushed them aside. It was a big fight for a while. As one Union officer remembered, he said, "It sounded like all the earthquakes in the world and all the thunder and lightning storms together in the space of 2 miles going off at once." Farragut lost one ship sunk and three disabled, but he took New Orleans. One city the North was not able to take was Charleston. They tried again and again. They mounted major naval efforts at Charleston, but Fort Sumter, which was reduced to a pile of shapeless rubble, really, but still with guns in it, and the ring of forts around Charleston Harbor prevented the Federals from capturing the city. It was finally taken when Union forces approached from the land side very late in the war. The Confederates had to give it up. Until then, the Navy had tried, especially in April of 1863, and then later in the summer, on into August 1863, never were able to take that most famous of secessionist cities. The last ports were closed in 1864 and 1865. Farragut again played the key role at Mobile, the last of the Confederate ports on the Gulf. This came in August of 1864. August 5th, Farragut assembled 14 wooden ships, 4 ironclads, to bombard 2 forts that guarded the entrance to Mobile Bay. He lined up his vessels, decided to run them past these forts. There were also torpedoes, mines in the way, and one Union ironclad waiting, or one Confederate ironclad, excuse me, waiting inside. The Union vessels went forward. The first one in line was an ironclad. It hit a mine and sank. Farragut was on his wooden flagship, the Hartford. He pulled his ship to the front of the line, went forward. Some of his officers were a little jittery about this. They said there are reports of torpedoes ahead. He said, in his imperishable naval words, "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." He was 60-some years old. The men thought perhaps he had less to lose than some of the younger men on the crew, but nonetheless, there they went forward. They made it into the bay. They defeated the Confederate ironclad that was waiting for them, which was the Tennessee, and closed the last important Confederate city or bay on the Gulf. The very last southern port was Wilmington, North Carolina, which fell to a combined Union Navy and Army operation in January of 1865. That is the last of the ports. The question that historians have debated is how effective the blockade was, and there are a couple of ways to look at it. One way is how many ships got through. Even at the end of the war, about 1 in 2 blockaders was getting through, about 1 in 2. The South imported at least 600,000 rifles, 600,000 pairs of shoes, several million pounds of lead and food, and other quantities of material. In all, about 8,500 vessels got through the blockade, 1,500 were captured. Those figures suggest the blockade was a failure. But the real question is how much would have gotten through without the blockade? And looked at that way, 20,000 ships cleared southern ports in the 4 years prior to the Civil War, 8,500 during the war. And the ones that did get through tended to be smaller, swifter blockade runners that couldn't carry as much in the way of goods as those pre-war vessels had. Overall, I think it's a good estimate that the blockade cut the southern maritime trade to about 1/3 of its normal level, and much of what did come in early in the war was not war-related material. Many luxury goods were imported until the Confederate government passed legislation saying that you had to import war-related materials. Lacking an industrial base equal to the task of producing the cannon and firearms and munitions, medicine, clothing, and other things that their armies needed, the Confederacy needed these imports, and the fact that the blockade cut down on the flow of goods from abroad certainly did hurt the Confederacy. The Union Navy didn't defeat the Confederacy with its blockade, but the blockade was certainly a factor in helping to wear away the ability of the Confederacy to resist. It was an effective part of the Anaconda plan to squeeze the South into submission. So we'll leave the blockade for now. In our next lecture, we'll continue with a review of the Naval War. We'll look at what was going on the rivers of the South and with the Confederate commerce raiders.